Every house must have a puja room, must have a prayer room. We spend so much money on building big, big houses. That's good, but we should always keep enough space for the Lord. Build a nice room, which is kept clean, which is well, you know, nicely, simply decorated. And that room should be used. It should not be just for show. You know, I get these elaborate murtis from Jaipur and these tiles from Bikaner and Jodhpur with all Om and all the gods and goddesses, but I never go there. That room should be a place where one should visit regularly. After your bath in the morning, go sit for a few minutes, take out time, invoke the Lord's blessings, grace, do some prayers. You know, even you don't have to do, if you can do the elaborate prayers and you have time, do that. But if not, just a simple invocation of the Lord's grace, because that carries you throughout the day. Not of us just go hurriedly, you know, just standing, just do a namaskar and run. Oh, I'm in a hurry. No, not like that. You know, do sashtang, namaskar, bend down and spend some time in that, because that gives you a lot of energy, a lot of strength, a lot of courage. And that's what I think 2 weeks ago Pankaj talked about when he talked about the different kinds of worship in the verse number 4 that we had done last time. He said, Sattvic people, they worship devas, they worship gods. And that is what our goal in life is. If I find I am doing anything tamasic or rajasic, that's what this scripture is for me to, it's like a checkpoint. You know, when I get there, I check myself. Okay, am I being tamasic? Am I being rajasic? Or am I being sattvic? If my activities are just selfish and, you know, that's, I'm in rajas. Or if I'm lazy, unproductive, not doing anything, I'm in tamas. So I have to move myself from tamas to rajas, from laziness to activity, then from activity to unselfish activity dedicated to the Lord. So that is what this prayer does. It takes our mind in a sattvic direction. And then the other, in the fourth verse, he says, the rajasic people worship the yakshas, the powerful people. So like Kubera, you know, the god of wealth, they worship. Or in the modern society, they worship politicians. Because why? Because they can get me contracts, I can make a lot of money. Or other wealthy people, they associate with other wealthy people, you know, in the country clubs, build up contacts so I can make my business. And then the tamasic people, of course, associate with gundas, you know, with, here they talk about pretas, the spirits, but in the modern age, it is the gangsters and the crooks and the drug dealers. So depending on your state of mind, that is whom you worship. And the reason the Lord says is, he says that depending on our faith, so is our action. So my action depends on my faith, and my faith depends on my nature, on my tendencies. Because we are born with certain vasanas, certain tendencies, and then we accumulate more. And so that determines my thinking, and then my mind and intellect, and my faith. What is important to me? That is my faith. What is it that's driving me to work? And then that ultimately results in actions, good or bad, sattvic, rajasic or tamasic. So this is what we had covered so far. Today we'll do verse number 5 and 6 together. And then if we have time, we'll do verse number 7. So what here Krishna addresses tapas. Tapas is austerities. Okay? This activity done with lot of vigor and force. And in the olden days, you know, people used to do tapas, sit for years in the Himalayas and, you know, meditate. And then sometimes even extreme tapas was done. So that is condemned in these two verses. And also, what is the modern interpretation of tapas? What is tapas in the modern age? None of us are sitting in the Himalayas or in the caves. So how we can translate that into our activity? So we'll try to cover that. So verse number 5 and 6 together, that's what Gurudev has done in his commentary also. Ashastra vihitam ghoram,
ashastra vihitam ghoram,
tapyante te तप्यन्ते ये तपो जनाः दम्भाहङ्कार संयुक्तः कामरागबलान्विताः कर्षयन्तः शरीरस्थम् भूतग्राममचेतसः मां चैवान्तः शरीरस्थम् तान् विद्यासुरनिश्चयान् So he says, a shastra vihitam. Shastra means the scriptures. So vihitam means what is given to us by the scriptures. Their activities are a shastra. They are not according to the scriptures. They are not scientific because the scriptures very scientifically describe what our activities should be. So they are not scientific. They are not as per the scriptures. And they are ghora tapyante. And they are extreme penance. These people, these tapa, these jana, these people perform ghor tapas, extreme, penance up to where the body suffers. And they think that will give them great spiritual benefit by torturing the body. And why do they do it? Either out of wrong understanding, because they have not understood correctly, or sometimes they do out of dambha and ahankar. Dambha is hypocrisy and ego. Or they do it kam raga balan vitaha. Or they are propelled by kama and raga, desire and attachment. That propels them, that gives them the energy to do it. Then in the process, karshayanta sharirastham. In the body, who resides? The Lord. Bhagwan resides. That's Om indicates the Lord's presence. And so God resides in all of us. But what they do? They persecute. First of all, they persecute bhutagramam. They persecute this body itself. The body suffers achetasaha. They, without thinking, they are not thinking correctly. And then mam cha aivanta, and me also. Here Krishna says me. Me means the Lord. I reside in every body. And you can say it's Krishna or Jesus or, you know, Allah or, you know, Buddha or whatever your faith is. When Krishna says I, he does not say only me. You cannot have Ganpati there or Mother Lakshmi, no. When Krishna says I, he's identifying with the total consciousness. He says, I, the total consciousness that resides in your body, you persecute me also. Not only you persecute your body, you also persecute the divinity within. And Tan Vidya, and know these people as to be Asuri. They are Asuric people, they are not Sattvic people. These people who persecute themselves in the name of spirituality are actually Asuric people. So let us cover a little bit. So as we said, there are a lot of people who do tapas, and tapas is good, you know, to have some amount of self-control is good. You know, like in all the scriptures, they have fasting. You know, Ekadashi, you should fast. Or Christians fast during Easter. Or Muslims fast during Ramzan, the month of Ramzan. That is good. But it should be done within limits, within reasonable. It should not happen that, you know, you just keep on fasting for days on end, only drink water. And then, or people do, you know, terrible penances. It used to happen in the past, but, you know, it still happens. People will just torture themselves and just, you know, hang themselves over fire, walk over nails, doing all kind of, you know, ridiculous type. And it's not only, it's a lot in Hinduism, but also in other faiths. I had heard, I don't know if it still happens, but until a few years ago it was, there is a church in Italy where people, it's up on the hill, and people are supposed to walk on their knees, climb up the hill. And there are sharp rocks. And so people climb up, and that's supposed to give you a lot of spiritual. And as they are walking, their knees start bleeding, their feet start bleeding, and they will keep crawling. And then they walk towards the, it's a to the mother goddess, to Mary. And as they walk in the central aisle, that whole aisle is filled with blood, and it's so slippery. And I mean, I don't know what kind of penance is that. And the same thing in, you know, in Hinduism is much worse, because people have so misunderstood tapas, you know, that they just torture their body, and they will, you know, not eat for days, or they will hang themselves in over fire and all. So this kind of tapas does not give you spiritual benefit. If you torture, again, self-control is good, doing some amount of self-control, but excessive problems where your the body is suffering is not recommended. And what is tapas? In the olden days, tapas, as we said, you know, we describe in the Puranas, these people would sit in the Himalayas for so many years, and then God would appear and all that. And but nowadays, tapas is any sustained activity which is done continuously in one direction, you can call as tapas. Like an athlete, you know, preparing for the Olympics, you know, he for 8 years ahead, he will start every morning, you know, particular diet, and then particular exercise, and then specific training. And for hours, he will train, you know, Olympic runners or marathoners. And they and their whole life is dedicated towards that goal. Okay, 8 years from now, I have to win the gold medal. That is tapas. Or a lot of us, we are all familiar in this modern age of overwork. You go in the morning, 5, 6, 7 in the morning, and then you work till 8, 9 o'clock at night. Why? To earn more money, to get more success. You know, you sacrifice your wife, your children. So that is also tapas. And again, that has to be regulated. Again, my work has to be. Sri Krishna in the 6th chapter says that this yoga is not for people who work too much or do not work at all. Either, you know, you are working 18 hours a day, and they say, you know, we are hum to karma yogi hain. You say, how are you a karma yogi? I work 18 hours a day. That's not karma yoga. Even a smuggler works 18 hours a day. That does not make him a karma yogi. Or a bank robber, how lay whole night they stay awake. So karma yoga is activity which is measured and directed in the right direction. Or some people, you know, sleep too much. So Krishna says those who sleep too much or those who don't sleep at all, they'll sleep 2-3 hours and then they say, I have to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning to meditate, or 3 o'clock till 6, you know, this is Brahma Muhurat. I mean, for that, then you go to bed at 8. So you get your 6-7 hours of sleep. But, you know, people will say, I don't sleep. I only sleep 2-3 hours and then I can, you know. So that is also torturing your body, not eating enough. Or eating too much, you know, eating too much is bad, not eating at all. So tapas is any sustained activity that is done. So that also has to be done in moderation. Not working at all is bad, and overworking is bad too. So that is what he says, that tapas has to be done scientifically according to the scriptures. And then we find that people sometimes do this tapas, you know, like trying to get these siddhis. You know, people are doing all these penance to get a lot of powers, to show off to the world. I remember when I was young in India, there was this man who claimed he could walk on water. And so he was announced in the newspapers and the TV, and everybody gathered. He said, on this particular day, on this lake, I'm going to walk on water. I've done so many years of tapas and now I have this ability. And so the whole country was talking about, oh, this particular person is going to walk on water. And on that particular day, the reporters and the TV and everybody showed up. And he stepped and he sank like a log. So the tapas is either done for hypocrisy or for ego, to show off. You know, people will say, I don't eat, you know, I fast. And for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, I don't. But then you go to his house. And like Swami, I don't know, Tejo Mainanji or somebody says, if a person is fasting for 2-3 weeks and not losing weight, then there has to be some, he has to be eating somewhere. So that is what, that is called hypocrisy and ego, where you are doing it not for your, see, when you do this self-control, it is good. Fasting, doing some, you know, waking up early in the morning to for meditate, for puja, for yoga. doing so that, you know, I mean, instead of sleeping for 8 hours, 9 hours, I sleep 6 hours or whatever my 7 hours. I get up at 5 in the morning, meditate for a while, do some yoga, reading. That is good. Where you are self-control, you are controlling the body so that it does the right thing. So the goal is my own spiritual growth. It's not for me to show off. You know, some people will get up in the morning, early morning, and chant Om loudly so the whole neighborhood can hear how spiritual this guy is. No, that's not the purpose. The purpose is for my own. They say even your right hand should not know what your left hand is doing. So the idea is that it should be done in privacy, should be done for my own spiritual growth, not to show off to others, not to let people think, you know, what a great yogi this person is. No, it's done for my own. Or you may do it for teaching. You know, some people learn so that they can teach others, and that is also good. As long as it is not done with the idea of showing off, you know, that I know so much. And if that is the attitude, then even that teacher's spiritual progress gets impaired if it is done with that attitude, that, you know. So all of this should be done with the for the purpose of self-growth. And then he says, kama raga balan vitaha, is driven by desire and attachment. The best example is Ravana or Hiranyakashyapu. You know, in our Puranas, they give examples of these. You can say Rakshasas, but they were very, very, they had done a lot of tapas. They had done a lot of penance. Yes, you know, done so much tapas that they had got tremendous powers. Ravan had the power that, you know, he could conquer the earth and the heaven and the hells and everything. Hiranyakashyapu had a power that, you know, he could not be killed. You know, all his things, that he could not be killed inside the house, outside the house, not killed by man, not killed by gods. You know, all those powers they had got. But the powers were done for selfish. Once they acquired the powers from God, then they did not use it for the benefit of mankind, but they used it for their own power, you know, aggrandizement. I am the ruler of the three worlds. I am the most powerful. I am the most wealthy. You know, Sri Lanka was called the Sone Ki Nagari. It was a city of gold because he had taken gold from everywhere and made his Lanka very powerful. So this kind of tapas, which is done for my own selfishness. And the same thing in the modern days is when, you know, people work hard and accumulate big business and lot of wealth, and then they just keep it for themselves, then that is wrong. Like I was reading today's paper about Zuckerberg, the founder of Facebook. 99% of his stock he's going to give to charity. Bill Gates gives $1 billion every year, and his money still never gets less. See, the Lord above, you know, fulfills it. Here, Bill Gates' net worth has never gone down, even though he gives, and they do it very correctly. They make a proper foundation. They give it to the worthy causes. So that's what they are saying, that when you accumulate power, power should be used for the benefit of others, not for my own children should become powerful and my family should become rich. That's what we find, you know, in politics. So that kind of tapas is wrong. It is condemned by the Bhagwan himself. And actually, this reminds me of a very interesting story. It's a very little bit humorous. So, you know, there are three gods. We have Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh. Brahmaji is the creator. Not Brahman, not the total consciousness, but Brahma the creator, Vishnu the sustainer, and Lord Shiva the destroyer, one who takes us at the time of death. And Brahmaji, of course, lives in Brahma Loka, and he's the creator. So he has a beautiful palace, and his wife Saraswati lives in a gorgeous palace. And Vishnu, of course, his wife Lakshmi is the goddess of wealth. So her palace is unparalleled in the whole universe. And poor Parvati, who is Shiva's wife, see, Shiva is a renunciate. He just has a loincloth, you know, this tiger skin. He doesn't care. He's just meditating all the time in the Himalayas, in Kailash, Mount Kailash. And where does his wife live? Under a tree. Yeah, he doesn't care. Ghar mein chota, maybe a hut or something. And she has her two children, Ganesh and Kartikeya. So he lives like that. He's a total renunciate. So it so happened the wives were one day talking, you know, and as they do, when wives get together, and Lakshmi was saying what trouble she has maintaining her big house. And then Saraswati says, you know, I have so many servants. And Parvati is silent because she has nothing, you know, she's just living under a tree. So they tell her, why are you doing that? See, we don't even have any children. You have two children and you are living under a tree. Your God is Mahadev. Your husband is Mahadev. Ask him to build you a proper house. What is this? You know, it's not befitting you. Okay. She gets stimulated. So she goes to Shivji. And Shivji, of course, is sitting in meditation. He's hours. He said, finally, he comes out and she says, look, I'm not happy. So he says, why? He says, look, I'm living under a tree. You are the Almighty Lord and you can't even build me a proper house. And my poor two children, they are out in the cold. So, okay, what do you want? Yeah, I want a nice house. So, okay, so he calls Vishwakarma, you know, who's the architect. This is a story in the Puranas. So he calls Vishwakarma the architect of the gods and he says, whatever Parvati wants, build it. So Vishwakarma builds, Parvati gives detailed direction, elaborate, huge house. She's very happy it's being constructed. Finally, the house gets ready. And so she has to move in, but they have to do graha pravesh. You know, they have to do the puja before, you know, you do the prayers before you can move into the house. She said, we need a pandit. So they said, we'll call Ravana, you know, because Ravana is Shiva's devotee and was a profound pandit, even though he later on became, you know, wrong, bad, but he was, knowledge was unbelievable, his, you know, pandit knowledge. So they said, call him. So he said, okay, he did the elaborate puja for 2-3 days, you know, all the havan and everything. And it was time to enter the house as the puja ended. So you have to give Guru Dakshina to the pandit, right? You have to give him a little donation. So Shivji asked Ravan, what would you like in Guru Dakshina? He says, I want this house. So she's again under the tree. Shivji says, apna naseeb hai sir, our destiny, you won't. So the point is that these people, even when they are doing puja, he is looking at what I can get out of it. See, that is the motive and that is wrong. When you do these activities, it should be done for the benefit of mankind, for the welfare of others. So this tapas, which is done in the wrong way, with the wrong method, is condemned. Then another wrong method of tapas, which was done and is still done, but at least I remember for a long time, not only in India, but even in South America and other parts, even in Africa, even in here, is the offering of young people, you know, like young girls were sacrificed, or human sacrifices were done, or animal sacrifices were done. Animals were, they are still slaughtered, you know, on certain occasions. They kill animals or they offer it to God or they even sacrifice humans. Some of the ancient tribes and cannibal tribes would sacrifice humans or girls would be thrown into the well as an offering to God. So we should get a good harvest, you know. So that is done. Oh, so that the society should prosper. And this girl was considered a big honor if you are selected. I remember reading about it that in some parts in South America, they would sacrifice these girls and it was considered a big honor to be selected. And then their parents would get a lot of gifts and all. But that, you know, how do you think the God up there will be pleased when, you know, so some of his children are being slaughtered in front of him? And people just don't understand that. And so these things, again, slowly they are being eliminated and that is good, but that is to be condemned. How are we doing it in the modern age? Modern age is the rituals. What are we doing is cigarettes. If you look at cigarettes, it's an elaborate ritual. Nowadays, you don't see many people smoking. But I remember in the olden days, they'll take out a cigarette, they'll tap it on the box. And then, you know, then they'll put it in the mouth, not light it and enjoy that, you know, feeling. And it's a, and then they will bring the thing and light it. It's an elaborate ritual. And then they will blow the smoke. You know, there's so much.
You make a circle.
I remember when I was growing up, that was the thing to do. Nowadays, thank God, in America, the smoking is gone down. But what have the tobacco companies done? Has their business reduced? No. Because now they are marketing it in Asia, Africa, Smoking is increasing like anything. I remember when I went to China, Vietnam and Philippines. Yeah, when you go to Vietnam and Philippines, everybody smokes. Every man smokes. And now they are marketing the women. All the men they have already captured. And they're getting the young men and women. Because they know you get somebody at age 15 or 20 in school, next 30, 40 years, as long as he lives, he's a source of revenue. And they advertise through all these, you know, famous sportsmen or in the race car races or in the film stars. I remember when I was growing up, you know, the film stars all used to model Wills and, you know, Charminar and all this, you know, Four Seasons and all that. So that is what, and it's interesting, the U.S., even though in the U.S. they don't allow marketing, but the agriculture department spends $2 billion every year to give to the tobacco company so they can market their products in other parts of the world for advertising. And the states, you know, the South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia, they are actively, the governments, the state governments are marketing these products abroad so that, and the problem is in these underdeveloped countries, there is already a problem of, you know, malnutrition, poverty, poor health. And on top of that, we are selling them cigarettes. It's not only the U.S., but even the China, Russia, Japan, their governments are actively selling cigarettes, not only in their own country, but in their other countries. So that, to do that, and it's interesting, the tar content, you know, here that they restrict the tar content, but the cigarettes sold in Philippines or Vietnam has four times the tar that is legally allowed in the U.S., and has a much larger amount of nicotine to addict the people. So that is the wrong kind of sacrifice, where we are sacrificing our young men and women for wealth. You know, just as you're throwing a woman in the well so that the harvest may be good, you're doing the same thing. You know, we are sacrificing our youngsters, catching them in high school. Another thing that I can never get over is this legalization of marijuana. That is one of the most stupid things that the U.S. is doing, because we are telling our children that it is okay to smoke an addictive drug. Marijuana is addictive. It has serious brain effects. It affects your central nervous system. And we are telling our children you can go to the corner store and buy it. That's absolutely nonsense. It's absolutely ridiculous. So that is called the wrong kind of tapas, the wrong kind of sacrifice, the wrong kind of doing activity with the wrong motive. The idea is to earn money, and in the process, whoever I sacrifice, whoever I hurt, it doesn't matter, as long as, think about the negative karmic effect when you are selling cigarettes or even selling alcohol. You know, again, alcohol is another drug. You know, people think it is okay. It has become socially acceptable. But we are promoting alcoholism, you know, we are promoting people with liver disease, we are promoting all these problems, accidents, you know, drunk driving and all. So a person who makes and markets alcohol is equally responsible. If somebody gets drunk and, you know, guns, that's another thing. They say, oh, guns don't kill people, you know, mental illness. But if you are marketing and selling all these, like this couple who shot, these guns, they have been trying to regulate for a long time, these automatic machine guns that can kill, you know, 500 people at one time, 100 rounds, and they're trying to ban those. But I understand somebody needs a hunting rifle, or even that I think is wrong. But why does an ordinary citizen need a machine gun that will shoot 100 or 200 rounds, you know, in one minute? So that is all the wrong kind of, you know, tapas, the wrong kind of austerity done with the wrong motive. I always remember the Siddhartha story, not Siddhartha the Gautam Buddha. There was another story called Siddhartha, written by an author called Hermann Hesse. Very beautiful book. I remember I read it as a teenager. I think a few years back I had told this story, but most of you probably haven't heard it. It's a very nice story I read as a young boy. So there was this monk, his name was also Siddhartha. He was not Gautam Buddha, but he was a monk and he was inspired by Gautam Buddha. He lived around the same time. That's what the story says. I don't know whether it's fiction or fact. So this monk decides to, you know, he wants to become spiritually evolved. He wants to become a realized monk. So he says, I must do penance, you know, because it is described that you have to sit and do penance. So he sits under a tree and does ghor tapas, you know, intense penance he does, where he for days he doesn't eat, he hardly even drinks water. He becomes thin like a skeleton, and he bones and nothing, no, and he cannot even walk. And he is totally, you know, his body is all emaciated and he looks so horrible, and he persecutes himself for years and years. And then he finds that spiritually he's not too much better. I mean, maybe a little bit. He had developed self-control. See, he had developed a lot of control over his body. He could go without, you know, days without eating, drinking and all. But his mind, he was still used to be very agitated and disturbed. And, you know, so he said, I don't know, I'm not going the right path. Forget this. This is nonsense. I don't like this tapas. So this is, they describe in detail in the book. And finally, he said, I'm going to give it up. So then he starts eating. And he was a young, very healthy, you know, very handsome looking boy. So he starts eating. So he comes back to his normal shape. And he goes into the city and he meets this prostitute. And this prostitute immediately takes a liking to this young man. And the prostitute was very rich. You know, she had accumulated a lot of money from all the. So she adopts this boy. And so now he starts living in her house, and all the sex and enjoyments and everything, food, drink, you know, parties all the time, late night, you know, till 2 o'clock in the morning. So he goes from one extreme to the other extreme, where he was doing nothing. Now he's doing everything. And for months he stays with her. And slowly he refines that he's gaining weight and his, you know, he's becoming now very lazy. And he says, now I can't fast anymore. I'm losing control on my body. On the one hand, he had so much. And now he says, this is also not correct. You know, that one extreme is not good. Other extreme, where you're just enjoying from morning to night and not doing anything. So he says, I need to find a middle path. And so towards the end of the book, they very beautifully describe that he becomes a boatman. So I'll become a boatman. So he acquires a small boat. He leaves the prostitute. He says, I, you know, sorry, you know, this is not for me. Because his goal was spiritual growth. You know, his goal was not just to enjoy. So he becomes a boatman. And they describe so beautifully that he buys this boat and he just takes people across, you know, few pennies, few rupees he gets every day. And, you know, with that, he's very happy. And as he's pushing his boat, he's rowing it manually, he watches the river and he says, the river has taught me. This river has been coming for thousands of years, millions of years running. And she just runs and, you know, is just serving mankind. And so watching the river, he develops a tremendous inner peace. And then you can see in his face the glow. And before he becomes a boatman, he sees Buddha, actually. That's also described. He actually saw Buddha when he was with that prostitute. He saw Buddha, and he saw him with his followers. And on Buddha's face, he saw so much glow of spirituality. He said, that's what I want. How did he get that? And then he even hears Buddha's preaching. And Buddha himself had done a lot of penance before. For 32 years before he finally realized the path of moderation is good. And so Buddha preaches that. He says, follow a middle path, neither too much this way, nor too much. And so inspired by that, he becomes a boatman. And through the river, he says, the river taught me. The river teaches him, you know, the constant flow of water and the silence and the peace. And then he's doing his physical activity, earning an honest living. And so it's a very beautifully described book. I mean, I don't know if it's still available. So that is what they say, that tapas should be done with proper understanding, according to the scriptures, done for my growth, spiritual growth, not for showing off, not so that I may get power so I can impress. You know, people get siddhis, powers, and so they can impress society and become more wealthy. They say if the siddhis are misused, then immediately you lose them. Because the moment ego comes, you know, I am such a great mahatma, such a great sadhu, I am so powerful. Immediately, when the ego comes, your power goes away. And then to misuse it is actually to misuse the talents. So our body and our mind and intellect are our equipment to realize the truth, to know God. So they should be used properly. That's why, like, your car, you know, is an instrument for you to go from here to there. If you don't maintain your car, don't service it, it's not going to provide you. So same way, the body has to be maintained, but not indulged. Not overindulged. Take care of your body, and especially take care of your mind and intellect. Fill your mind with good thoughts, with love, compassion. And when you work with that attitude, then your body is, then your actions are right, then your vasanas improve, and then you come closer to God. So the last point that Krishna makes in this verse, he says they not only persecute themselves, but they persecute me. They say, how can Krishna be persecuted? He's the Lord of the universe. He's unaffected. You know, he's avyayam and all that. He's unchanging. He's untouched. How can he be affected? How can he be persecuted? So Krishna says that my job is to illumine your body, mind and intellect. So the Lord, the Om within illumines the body, mind and intellect so that this person may function. But if his body is being tortured, his mind and intellect is unhappy, is miserable, Krishna says, I find I don't have a good field to illumine. Because this, you know, because he wants to stay, you know, like when you want, you invite a guest to your house, don't you clean up your house and put everything in order so that when an honored guest comes, he should find a nice place to sit. You know, you offer him food and, you know, offer him a place. In the old days, we used to wash, you know, the guest's feet. You know, the idea being that the guest. So here, Bhagwan is living in our heart as a guest. And we have to make a nice place for him to stay. A place where he feels welcome. A place which is clean, which is not full of dirt, which is not full of negativities. So the mind and intellect is peaceful. The body is clean, well taken care of. So that's what Krishna says, that when I come and live in your heart, you should make it worthy, you know, like, because he's the you know, highest guest. The Lord himself is coming, living in our heart. So he says, do not persecute the divinity within you, because we are all divine. We are all the children of that one God. We all have this consciousness within us. And honor that. Do not persecute it. Honor it and act like that. So when Krishna is in me, or Jesus is in me, or Buddha is in me, my activity should be like Jesus, should be like Krishna, should be like Buddha. It should not be like Ravana, should not be like Kansa, should not be, you know. So that's what they're saying. So that is the right kind of tapas. That is the right understanding. And that is the essence of verse number 5 and 6. He says, people who do that are asuras. They are not divine. They are undivine. Asura, not divine. So that is this verse. Any other questions or comments?
Someone in step 5 or step 6 is following it. And the other people are doing very well without vasudeva.
Yeah.
You
know, I know.
These vasudeva folks.
If you believe in something.
Yeah, if you believe. Okay, I'll tell you my own example. Okay, my bed is north and west. I actually, and somebody sent me a DVD or a YouTube clip that if your head is facing north or west, that's actually bad. And for the past few months, every morning I have been waking up with a headache. So it was my own example. And I watched this. Somebody just, you know, people send you all kind of junk emails. I happened to read this and watch it. And actually I switched my bed to south and east. And literally it has helped me myself for my headaches. Because they say the North Pole has this magnetic thing, and your north is magnetic effect. So that it has helped me personally. I can give you my own example that it really has helped. I turned my bed around, sleep the other way, and it has helped me. So they say you should, by the way, if your bed is pointing north or west, please don't do that, because according to this particular person, it is your head should be either on the south or the east. So you can buy the compass. You can buy the compass app in your phone and check where your head is. Right. Right. No, that's true.
Everything is relative.
Right. But the thing is, as long as I have a body, I have to follow the physical rules. See, I cannot violate the rules. That means if I say I'm not going to eat. Why? Because I'm Brahman. Brahman doesn't need to eat. I still have to eat, I still have to drink, I still have to go to the restroom. So I have to follow the rules of this body and of this world where I live in. Though, yeah, at the highest level, if I say I'm Brahman, I'm not this body, then, you know, that the body is. But still, the body has to be maintained. Even realized saints used to also eat.
What is the meaning of all those things? So if it's not gathering, if somebody right. makes up all these stories, that's what it is.
Yeah, I don't think it's made up. This Brahma Murta has a significance, though, because especially in, maybe there it is not. But when the rishis were living in India, and it is known that if you get up at that time and meditate early morning, definitely your meditation will be better than if you meditate at 7 o'clock at night.
This is my personal experience too.
Yeah, yeah. Because when you, in the morning, the sun is rising, there's a lot of positive. That's why they say your head should be facing east or south, because in east the sun rises and you get a lot of positive energy. The sun is the source of all the energy in this universe. That's why we do the Gayatri. They say, why should you chant the Gayatri Mantra? Now, Gayatri Mantra is well known to increase your intellectual capacity. You might say it's all bunk. You know, people who don't chant Gayatri Mantra, are they not intelligent?
Yes.
Because most of the negative things are done around midnight, 1 o'clock.
Right? It is their sleep time.
Now. Their sleep time. Yeah, nobody wakes up at 4 o'clock in the morning to rob a bank. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha, Sarve Santu Niramayaha, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchit Dukkha Bhag Bhavet. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Guru Bhyo Namo.